With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Researchers say that a chemical that can harm crops is increasing in forests. University of California researchers say satellite data is revealing increasing levels of nitrogen dioxide in remote forest areas of the state. The chemical can harm plants and crop yields. While short-lived in the atmosphere, it contributes to ozone and particulate pollutants, which can cause respiratory issues and asthma. Researchers say wildfire and soil emissions are contributing reasons for the increase in nitrogen dioxide levels. Their findings from satellite data were published in the journal Environmental Research Letters. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And now let's get into today's show headlines. Wage rates and the agriculture workforce. How does the statewide increases in wage rates impact the agriculture workforce? AgSafe President and CEO Teresa Keene says there's been a shift in the ag industry interest.
I think we're seeing a shift, and especially if there are other industries that are offering higher wages. And so I feel like you see some of our, even though it's still usually outside, but folks moving over to construction where they might get a higher wage. And I think that's where the ag industry is starting to like really pull together and begin thinking about how we train our workforce and really thinking about how we can upskill our labor force. And so providing opportunities for them to learn new things within those operations, thinking about those technology skills that they might need to run equipment and those opportunities to perhaps make a bigger jump on the pay grade. And so we hear, I've been hearing a lot more about that and our agricultural communities partnering with our community colleges and others to provide some of those additional trainings, some of those really skilled trainings so that there are more opportunities. And let's be honest, we've got a fantastic workforce. They are so dedicated and very skilled. And so if there are some opportunities that we can provide to them so that they stay in ag, we keep them, that retention is so critical.
And now here's AgNet West Brian Derman with more Ag News.
Plant sap analysis is becoming more popular among growers looking to better understand nutritional needs of plants. Chief Science Officer at New Age Laboratories, Jenny Garley, explained some of the differences between tissue and sap analysis.
Sap analysis is a paired sample, meaning that you take a Ziploc bag of new fully developed leaves and a Ziploc bag of old yet viable leaves. And the reason it's a paired or a sample set is so that the grower can look at nutrient mobility, the plant either stripping away, say, nitrogen to cause that yellowing leaf that we all know of nitrogen deficiency because the plant is moving it to the newer leaf. Sap analysis actually can show you that, or nitrogen excess, meaning the plant has moved all the nitrogen it wants to around and it's actually storing it in the older leaf. So nutrient mobility is what sap analysis measures. So when people look at traditional tissue testing, that's the accumulative nutrients that has been taken up and incorporated into the cellular structures of the leaf tissue up until the time of sampling. Sap analysis is the nutrients in the xylem and phloem that the plant is currently taking up.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, things are heating up across the U.S. once again. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says another heat wave is expected to develop across parts of the country near the end of this week.
In terms of the heat wave, we've been talking heat a lot lately, and we did have a big heat wave in the Midwest within the last week or so, and that has died down. We've pushed the heat back into the deep south, but the heat is going to come back by the end of this week. We are looking at a return to triple-digit heat, likely to expand as far north as at least South Dakota and on into much of the western Corn Belt once again. So even as the calendar turns to September, we are expecting to see some record-setting heat across the nation's midsection, large parts of the plains, the upper Midwest, and we'll continue to see those unfavorably hot temperatures in the deep south, places like Texas and the western and central Gulf Coast states, all dealing with really punishing heat. And the further south you go, the more persistent and consistent this heat has been, with parts of Texas dealing with this record-setting heat going all the way back into June.
He says warmer weather in the nation's midsection this week lends itself to crop maturity and field work.
Given that overall dry weather pattern, that is absolutely ideal for summer crop maturation as well as field work. We have a lot of active field work that is going on in the drier areas right now. That includes things like corn harvesting in the south. Pretty soon that'll move obviously further north into the Midwest. And then we have small grain harvesting active in the north right now, so things like spring wheat and barley. So ideal conditions for all of those activities. On the flip side, though, we do have concerns. We still have some immature, not fully mature crops still trying to add mass. So for example, corn that's not fully mature, still trying to fill out. Soybeans, the pods, still trying to fill at this point in some of the later developing areas.
And as for weather for the week ahead, he notes near to above normal temperatures and near to below normal rainfall are expected for the period of September 5th through the 11th.
Taking a look ahead, this is the 8 to 14 day weather outlook, covers the time period September 5th through the 11th. And once we get through this week and any impacts from Hurricane Idalia, it looks like much of the country is going to settle in to a hot and dry weather pattern as we head into meteorological autumn. Above normal temperatures expected virtually nationwide. In fact, the only areas expecting below normal temperatures during this time will be the Pacific Coast states and the Western Great Basin. In terms of precipitation, most of the country near to below normal rainfall. Wetter than normal conditions will be confined to the Northwest.
With the summer weather comes wildfire season. Rippey tells us about significant wildfire activity in places like Washington State and Louisiana.
The two Washington State fires that have been particularly destructive, the Oregon fire and the Gray fire. Now, a lot of containment has occurred on those, so they're not any longer a major threat. But again, collectively, those two fires each destroyed more than 300 structures for a combined total of more than 700. The Gray fire in particular burning near Medical Lake or near Spokane, Washington. The other, the Oregon fire, was very close to Elk, Washington. We have also seen fires in some of the Western Gulf Coast region where it has been extraordinarily hot in recent days. And we have gotten word that the Tiger Island fire, which is burning in southwestern Louisiana, has become the largest modern wildfire in Louisiana state history. About 33,000 acres burned in association with that Tiger Island fire. And unfortunately, almost two dozen structures destroyed in that fire as well. So it's not just the western U.S. and Hawaii. We've been dealing with some unusual fire activity also in the western Gulf Coast region.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA is making changes to its livestock indemnity program to better support cattle producers who have lost animals due to severe heat. Gary Crawford has more details.
Cattle producers in many areas of the country continue to be hit by severely high temperatures and, as you might expect,
the heat has taken its toll and increased cattle losses.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told us.
These heat domes plagued the United States, and they proved to be unsurvivable for animals. And temperatures, unfortunately, in the near term, aren't necessarily expected to let up.
Losses of cattle have been made more painful for producers because those animals are worth a lot more than they were just a few months ago.
And it's our job to work with producers to help them weather these events.
The Agriculture Department has a program to help with that called LIP, Livestock Indemnity Program.
It's administered by the Farm Service Agency, and it provides payments to producers who suffer livestock losses.
Including losses from things like heat. It pays at 75% of the fair market value of the animal. However,
stakeholders have expressed to us that the current livestock indemnity program payment rates for cattle at finish or near finish rates simply isn't and are not reflective of the losses that are being suffered.
Because the fair market value of cattle has increased rapidly this year, so have average weights. And so USDA is coming in now to change the fair market price payment rate for beef calves over 800 pounds.
Updating it from $1,244 per head to $1,618 per head, which we think is more reflective of the situation in feedlots across the country.
That rate will apply to all claims made during 2023. And so,
folks have already applied for and received payments for losses they suffered in 2023. They can and will receive an additional payment to get it up to the $1,618 per head rate.
Vilsack said payments should be going out the door here within a couple of weeks. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. And again, the change in the Livestock Indemnity Program payment rate does apply to claims made since the 1st of January of this year, even if claims have already been paid. To learn more, just simply contact your local Farm Service Agency office for more information. And as you may have heard, the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers did announce this week their final rule amending the 2023 definition of waters of the United States, or WOTUS. The final rule intends to conform with the recent Supreme Court decision in the Sackett versus EPA case. With this action, the Army Corps of Engineers will resume issuing all jurisdictional determinations, and the rule will take effect immediately. In response, American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval said the EPA chose to continue government overreach and revise only a small slice of the rule that Supreme Court rejected. He added, "We're pleased, though, the vague and confusing significant nexus test has been eliminated." I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Dairy Checkoff Smoothie Program is expanding. That's coming up on This Line of Ours. The results of a Checkoff-initiated smoothie program pilot showed increased milk and yogurt consumption and will be offered to more schools this fall. Research shows fruit smoothies are more popular than energy drinks, along with flavored water, juices, and soft drinks with Gen Z consumers. Dairy Management Inc. partnered with Chartwell's K-12, a food management company that serves more than 2 million meals in 4,500 schools daily, for a pilot last year. The results were encouraging enough for the company to make the smoothie program available to its entire suite of schools this year. General Mills joined the effort by providing culinary support and training. Chefs from Chartwell's and General Mills collaborated to produce 30 recipes that contain at least one of the daily recommended servings of dairy and fruit. A survey conducted after the pilot showed a very positive response from students, school food service staff, and administrators. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan. Often large ranches or dairies that are on the accrual method of accounting assume that the cost of cattle and cows must be capitalized and depreciated. That assumption may be only partially correct. I'll be back in a moment with the details.
Kansas State University's Master of Agribusiness program is not your average MBA. They blend online learning with face-to-face opportunities so you can gain the skills you need to make better business decisions on the farm or in the boardroom. Learn more, mab.ksu.edu.
I'll get back to the report in a moment, but I want you to know that Schrader Real Estate and Auction Company has sold farm and ranch land and farm equipment in 40 states. Learn how the Schrader family can help your family. Visit SchraderAuction.com. That's S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R auction.com. How should a ranch or a dairy on the accrual method handle the cost of cattle and cows purchased for dairy production or breeding? While the normal rule is capitalization, the cost to raise calves born on the farm may be expensed as incurred even if the accrual method of accounting is used. That's the case if the farm is not a tax shelter. While the tax shelter rule hardly ever applies in the farm setting, it can if 35% or more of losses are allocated to limited partners. An active farmer is not a limited partner, and if the interest was passed down in a multi-generational family business, it's also not a limited partner interest under the tax shelter rules. It's crucial that the animals are produced in a farming business. That can be an issue if a significant part of the income comes from processing or packing milk products, for example. In that situation, check to see whether there is more than a single business and how much income each business generates. Of course, these complications can be avoided if a switch to the cash method of accounting can be made. That might be possible because many times the use of the accrual method is for non-tax business reasons. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan.
The U.S. has a long-standing surveillance program at seaports, airports, and other points of entry, a program designed to keep foreign animal diseases, such as foot and mouth disease, out of the U.S. But what happens if such a disease does somehow get into the country? In that case, we've got
the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program,
or NAD PREP for short. Dr. Julie Wallen runs that program for the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service.
The NAD PREP program provides funds to states and industry organizations and tribes and others to build up our preparedness. So if we have an outbreak of a severe disease like foot and mouth disease, we have the tools ready to get it under control quickly.
One tool in that regard, the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, its job,
providing that first line of being able to detect where the disease is and where it isn't and allow us to quickly contain it.
A minute ago, we mentioned foot and mouth disease. This disease of cattle and pigs has successfully, so far, been kept out of the country since 1929. But if it did show up and it got out of hand, it could devastate the beef and pork industries. That's why Congress in the 2018 Farm Bill officially created another program,
the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank.
Dr. Wallen helps run that, and she told us the bank acquires and stores foot and mouth vaccine.
But we also stockpile diagnostic test kits so that we can quickly detect other diseases such as African swine fever, high path avian influenza, classical swine fever, and others.
And it's all being done to protect the U.S. livestock industry, both the large and the small operations.
Of course, we want to protect our really huge producers because they will have a huge impact on our food supply. But it's also about all the small producers, the backyard livestock owners, the people who keep chickens and pigs. It's all one ecosystem that can be impacted by an animal disease outbreak and have really severe reverberations to our food supply and our economy.
And Dr. Wallen says so far the USDA has invested
about $70 million in the vaccine bank, most of that being for foot and mouth disease vaccine.
And USDA has announced another $6 million investment for this next year, along with $23.5 million for the National Laboratory Network and the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Grain traders looking at declining crop ratings as dry weather continues across the Central Plains, while producers in the Southeast assess hurricane damage. I'm Mark Oppold from the Farm Progress Show with your bottom line report brought to you by Helena. Dry weather the past 10 days now expected to extend past Labor Day in the Central Belt. Traders are already discounting weekly crop ratings this past week. They look for a decline next Tuesday. That's our next update after the holiday. Producers also tell the bottom line report corn and soybean plants look to be maturing too fast, milder weather, and no rain. More corn tipback and aborted bean pods being reported. We see December corn about to close the gap with the March futures, especially now with September in delivery. November soybeans finding support below 1388, and December Kansas City wheat should find support near 610. This is the bottom line report. Heat is an issue in the Nebraska Panhandle down through Texas, slowing cattle weights. October futures could test that August high near 184. Wholesale pork coming off their lowest level since June 20th. Lighter weights will help. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
The Environmental Protection Agency's rewrite of the Waters of the U.S. rule failed to bring fairness to farmers and ranchers, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. AFBF Senior Government Affairs Director Courtney Briggs says Farm Bureau is disappointed in the direction taken by the EPA.
This was a real missed opportunity to write a WOTUS rule that is fair to the regulated community and that is truly durable. And the agencies have addressed the headline-grabbing aspects of the Supreme Court decision, like getting rid of the problematic significant nexus test, but they are trying to exploit aspects of the rule in order to expand their jurisdictional reach.
For farmers and ranchers, Briggs says the rule fails to bring clarity and certainty.
So while we've made a lot of progress with the Sackett decision, the agencies are still trying to be vague and amorphous with their policies, which equates to continued confusion and lack of certainty for landowners. So we have long called for a durable rule, but this rulemaking completely misses the mark.
Briggs says it's important that farmers and ranchers know the specifics of WOTUS to their state.
So the challenge now is to make sure our members understand the rules in the specific states that they live in, because there's still litigation that has enjoined the 2023 WOTUS rule in 27 states. So that is really our focus right now, is to make sure that our members are well equipped to adapt to this new rulemaking.
Visit fb.org/WOTUS to learn more. Michael Clements, Washington.
The U.S. Cattlemen's Association welcomes the LIP update. The U.S. Cattlemen's Association applauds recent action by the Department of Agriculture to update the 2023 Livestock Indemnity Program payment rate. Last week, USDA announced the payment rate for beef calves over 800 pounds will increase from $1,244 per head to $1,618. The payment will apply retroactively to all qualifying losses since January 1st of this year. No action is necessary for retroactive payments, and producers will receive an additional payment if applicable. Payments will be queued up for current losses as early as next week. FSA acknowledged that some animals might have lost weight due to extreme weather conditions, and they are working on how to handle those cases. USCA President Justin Tupper says a loss in today's market has a significantly higher impact on a producer's bottom line, and the updated indemnity better reflects the value of that animal. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
It doesn't happen very often in the western U.S. In fact,
It is a rare occurrence when it comes to a named tropical system entering the West still in that condition. That is why USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes that
Hurricane Hillary, in its remnant form as a tropical storm, became the first tropical cyclone since September of 1939 to have an inland tropical storm position over California.
The Pacific-based storm made landfall in northwestern Mexico mid-August as a Category 4 hurricane before decreasing in strength as it moved inland and obtaining that rare distinction in U.S. weather circles.
We did have an official tropical storm location near Palm Springs, California, and there was one more advisory after that that placed the tropical system over western Nevada.
The remnants of Hillary would be recorded as far north as the Pacific Northwest region. Like any system of its magnitude, Hillary provided its share of impacts to affected areas.
Excessive rainfall, meaning about a year's worth of rain falling in just a day's time. Those 4 to 8 inch rainfall totals in the deserts of Southern California has led to some significant flash flooding and debris flows, quite a few road closures.
Precipitation accumulations were less in highly populated areas, but in some cases, still historic. For instance,
Burbank, California, coming in with 3.28 inches of rain on Sunday, August 20th. That is the wettest August day on record there. And that single-handedly in one day broke Burbank's August all-time rainfall record, which had been 2.97 inches for the entire month back in 1977.
Another impact from post-Hurricane Hillary, significant wind gust.
Yuma, Arizona, right in the lower end of the Colorado Valley, seeing a wind gust to 69 miles per hour into south central California. Around Imperial, we saw a wind gust officially to 66 miles per hour, and we actually did see some wind gusts to hurricane force in the higher elevations. Palomar Mountain Lookout, 79 miles per hour in Southern California, 84 miles per hour, Big Black Mountain in Southern California.
Yet some of the impacts were beneficial in nature. Water levels at Lake Mead on the Colorado River rebuilding with wet winter precipitation and mountain snow runoff after reaching record low levels in 2022.
We did get a very small bump related to Hurricane Hillary. There's still some water running through some of the tributaries that will likely make it to the lake eventually.
The rains from remnants of Hillary also assisted with wildfire containment efforts and in turn air quality in the Pacific Northwest. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. During a recent press call, ABC Board Chair and Director of Operations for Campos Brothers Farms, Alexi Rodriguez, noted that the Almond Board's been working on some new marketing approaches to accompany the new crop.
As everyone is well aware, the industry is facing a lot of headwinds right now. The post-COVID world has been a challenging one for our industry, as well as many others. The ABC Board of Directors, along with staff, have been working hard every day to do our part to help overcome some of these challenges, with the main area of focus being driving global demand. Building demand has been a long-time priority of the organization, but we recognize that a lot has changed rather quickly, and to be effective, we need to adapt to those changes. So a tremendous amount of effort has gone into evaluating the current environment, and we as a board realized that we needed to do some evaluation. So what we tasked staff with was, you know, the developing of what ultimately has turned into what we're calling Project Thea. It's a project with a third-party strategic consulting firm that we engaged in to really help us strategically position California almonds for the future. The last time we did a study like this was about 2011, and so the landscape has changed quite drastically since then. What we did is we put together a steering committee of 12 pretty diverse representatives from the industry to make sure that we were very comprehensive in our approach. And what we are hoping for from this study is just basically to provide a fresh viewpoint on how we optimally allocate, you know, ABC market development funds and resources given today's current landscape. Findings from the project will be coming out soon. And after we have the chance to sort of digest everything, we'll be evaluating and repositioning our approaches as needed.
Almond Board President and CEO Richard Wacott also went into further detail about some of these specific marketing efforts in important markets for California almonds.
Obviously, the Almond Board is constantly trying to, you know, push the envelope in terms of driving global demand around the world, and that's the primary focus of the organization year in, year out. And so it's constantly a challenge to find new and unique ways to reach our consumers and also do it often partnering and collaborating with known either sports figures or others that can help carry that message forward. Wanted to mention a couple of other exciting things that are going on in the almond world. And one is on the European continent and the German market, which is the largest market for California almonds in Europe. It's our fourth largest export market. And we are launching a new ad campaign, which is titled The Mother of All Snacks. We've been working on the German market for a number of years to try and improve or increase almond snacking. Almonds are used extensively in a lot of German products and traditional products, marzipan, for example. But we've really been trying to educate the German consumer more on the benefits of eating almonds as a snack. So we're sort of combining the cultivation of almonds in the world as being something that goes back, you know, thousands of years and is noted in historical documents going back, you know, throughout the history of the world, really. And really combining that with the health benefits and the convenience of almonds as a snack. So we tested three campaigns, and the Mother Nature campaign really came through as the highest scoring. And we'll be launching on linear TV this week, then digital and social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, et cetera, will be used to get out this message of really combining what's a very healthy, natural product that's been around for a long time, made by Mother Nature, and that's good for your daily diet. So we're excited about to see how well that program can do in the German market coming up.
Another campaign will be centered on continuing to grow demand in the Indian market.
So I've always been fascinated how there's certain sports in the world which are like, you know, in the DNA of a certain culture, in one culture, and then hardly known in another. And I think cricket definitely fits into that, where if you're in the Commonwealth, it's part of your blood. When you're outside of that, you may not even know how it's played. And so we are taking advantage of the fact that the ICC Cricket World Cup will be played this fall in India. And if you've ever traveled to India, you know, cricket is the lifeblood of that country. It's really the only national sport. And so the fact that the ICC Cricket World Cup will take place there for the first time in 12 years is very exciting. India, if you don't know, is our largest export market by far. The market's grown by 250 million pounds in the past 6 years. It's now right around 400 million pounds a year that we export to India. And we think there's a long way to go there in terms of further demographic consumption around the country, as well as through ingredients and new products that can be launched there. So we're very excited about this opportunity. You know, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of eyes will be on this tournament. And we'll be emphasizing the energy benefits of almonds. So through the healthy oils, the protein and fiber, et cetera, that almonds convey to the human diet. This will be on in October and most of November, and we'll be utilizing 10-second commercials during the game, again, to highlight energy benefits. In addition to that, we have billboards up in many of the major cities as well as using bus shelters and that sort of outdoor display in New Delhi and in Mumbai. And one interesting fact, if you know the sort of the Indian festival calendar, which they have a lot of festivals in India, but this campaign coincides very nicely, dovetails with Diwali, which is their autumn festival. It's November 12th this year, so it'll be sort of towards the end of this tournament period. But it's by far India's biggest and most important holiday of the year. And it involves gift giving. And so almonds very often are a gift that symbolize joy, prosperity, happiness, etc. So we're really excited that this huge promotion will coincide with that. And overall, the ABC has integrated consumer programs of this nature in 10 countries around the world. And we find unique ways to message health and in certain cases, beauty as well in all of those markets. So it's a very, very exciting time.
Rodriguez wrapped up the call tying in the new Own Your Prime campaign with Deion Sanders and how it fits into the overall approach to increase consumer demand on a global scale.
For me, what I think stands out most about these new promotions is just how we've really leveraged the timing, both with the partnership with Deion and, you know, his debut as a coach in college football. That really has a lot of buzz. And then the Cricket World Cup and the timing and going directly into Diwali, I think we are going to be able to maximize our investment in each of these campaigns. And we're looking forward to seeing the results. And just wanted to reiterate from earlier, you know, we are working very, very hard as an organization to do our best to help to work through a lot of the challenges that the industry is facing. This by no means is a silver bullet, but and we realize we've got a long way to go. That being said, we do believe very strongly it's a step in the right direction, and we're looking forward to seeing the results of our efforts.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Nearly half of potatoes now go into frozen products. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows that the majority of potatoes in the United States are now sold in processed forms such as frozen, chipped, dehydrated, or canned. With the introduction of French fries as a key side dish in quick service restaurants, the share of potatoes that go into frozen products has risen in each decade since 1979. As a result, almost half of all potatoes going into food in the United States are now used to create frozen products, most of which are French fries. Meanwhile, the share of potatoes used as fresh table potatoes has declined decade by decade. Per capita, frozen potato availability during the pandemic-influenced 2019 to 2021 period was up 8% from a decade earlier. According to industry data and USDA research in the early 2000s, about 90% of frozen French fries moved through various food service venues. Quick service restaurants alone accounted for about two-thirds of French fry usage. According to CDFA's most recent crop and livestock report, potatoes are ranked 40th in California production, with the majority grown in Kern, Modoc, Siskiyou, and San Joaquin counties. NAFB contributed to that report.
The International Dairy Foods Association is accepting nominations for a variety of annual awards presented to leaders in the dairy industry. Winners will be announced and recognized at the 2024 Dairy Forum in Phoenix, Arizona, January 21st through the 24th. Nominations for the four awards will need to be submitted by Friday, October 27th. The fifth annual IDFA Laureate Award will be given to an outstanding leader in the dairy industry who's made significant prolonged contributions to the development and growth of the industry.
The 26th Annual Innovative Dairy Farmer of the Year Award recognizes dairy farms that have embraced innovation and technology, as well as industry collaboration and partnerships to achieve greater productivity and growth. The 2024 Food Safety Leadership Award honors an individual who's demonstrated outstanding leadership towards enhancing food safety within the dairy products industry. And finally, the first annual Workplace of the Year Award will be given to an outstanding IDFA member company that's created policies to promote a positive workplace experience for employees. More information about the awards is available at idfa.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Don't let sparse documentation stop you from applying for 22007 program. An expert says don't let a lack of documentation keep you from applying for USDA's 22007 program of financial assistance to producers who have been discriminated against by USDA. Gary Crawford has the report.
If you feel that the USDA in the past has discriminated against you in its farm programs, you may be eligible for financial assistance from a program called 22007. One of the coordinators at USDA is Monica Range. She says some people think you need a ton of documentation in order to apply for the program, and of course, the more proof you have, the better. However,
we do recognize that in some cases, individuals may not have documents because the discrimination happened many years ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
But Monica Range says don't let that stop you from applying for the program, because
what is important is that you tell your story about what happened in your situation, even if you don't have the documents available.
For complete information and an application form in English or Spanish, go online, search 22007 apply. That's 22007 apply. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.